Committee will come to order. Secretary, please take the roll.
Senator Zolnikov?
Here.
Senator O'Brien?
Here.
Senator McClafferty?
Here.
Senator Beard?
Here.
Senator Temple?
Yes.
Senator Hayman?
Excuse.
Senator Ellsworth?
Excuse.
Senator Molnar?
Here.
Senator Travis?
Here.
Senator McCamey?
Here.
Senator Dunwell?
Here.
Chairman Hertz?
Here. All right, committee, we got three bills to hear today, and then we're going to do executive action on one bill. So are you ready?
Sure.
Senator Zolnikov? This will open up the hearing on Senate Bill 246. Senator Zolnikov.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Daniel Zolnikov, Senate District 22. And today I have before you Senate Bill 246, which eliminates from statute the list of countries that were designated tax havens in 2003. And this list was last updated in 2009. So I'm going to go through the basics and then let the proponents and opponents really dig in. So first question is, what are tax havens? Tax haven is considered to be a country that had a tax system that was not transparent, had a low tax rate, did not require physical activity, and did not cooperate with tax authorities in other countries. Question is, where did this list come from? The tax haven concept and list were developed by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. The list was developed in 98 by this organization and has not been updated since. No nations that were included in the 98 list are now considered tax havens under current OECD criteria. So do other states have lists? Montana updated this list in 2003 and was the first state. And now it's the only state with a tax haven list in statute. Other states have adopted and then repealed their lists. How does this list affect businesses in Montana? The tax haven list affects the apportionment of corporate income for multinational corporations when they choose the water's edge election. Under Montana's water edge election, a corporation can choose to only report its activity within the United States and pay a higher tax rate. Under Montana law, a corporation must include as part of its U.S. activity any activity it has in a listed country. So the question is, why should the list be repealed? Since the list is no longer valid, requiring corporations doing business in Montana and other countries should not be required to include activities in these countries as part of their water's edge activity. And then there's an amendment that's been drafted to remove the individual state language as it's not needed to accomplish this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. So we'll start with proponents. Proponents to Senate Bill 246.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Derek Bell, B-E-L-L. I'm the Department of Revenue's Business and Income Tax Division Administrator here in support of Senate Bill 246. With your permission, Senator Hertz.
Please.
Mr. Chair, I'm handing out the Department of Revenue's interim report to the Revenue Interim Committee from last September, where we recommended the elimination of the tax haven list. And that's part of the reason why, or largely why, we're here today in support is feel that it's important that we stand by the recommendation that we made to the Revenue Interim Committee back in September. Appreciate the sponsor's description of what this bill does. I thought I'd take another step back, provide some additional context of what tax havens are and why we're here today. Again, earlier this session, you may remember I was before the same committee on another bill that addressed the apportionment of multi-state and multinational corporate income. We're not talking about strictly Montana businesses, just multi-state or, in this case, multinational C corporations. So corporations that have activity inside and outside the state of Montana. So when we're deciding how to determine Montana's share of that overall income, again, think of a pizza, all right? A company's total worldwide income is the pizza of income. Apportionment tells us how big a slice is attributable to Montana. So when we look at apportionment, we're looking at that multinational corporate activity from domestic activities and foreign activities. And back in 1987, the Montana legislature, due to pressure from the federal government, enacted what is called the Water's Edge election. And what that means is that, as the sponsor indicated, a multinational corporation having activity in Montana can elect to exclude its foreign income and loss from its Montana activities. What that does to the pizza that I just described is it shrinks it down to just purely domestic activities. And as you heard, if they make that election, it's prospective in nature, they pay a higher tax rate as a result of that. In 2003, this legislature, via House Bill 721, adopted the tax haven provision that we're here discussing today. Now, that only applies to corporations that made that Water's Edge election to exclude its foreign income and loss. So if a corporation has activities in one of the listed countries that's found in 1531.322, that income and loss has to be brought back into Montana. So back to the pizza, we have just domestic activities and income and loss occurring in those tax haven jurisdictions. So what's the problem with the list? Mr. Sponsor described what the problem is. The list was generated by the OECD. He had the acronym spelled out for you. I'm not going to try and do it because I'll mess it up. The OECD published the list back in 2000, but it was based on criteria that they established in 1998. The OECD has not modified its 2000 list. And by 2009, the OECD did not view any country on its original list as an uncooperative tax haven. It is not possible to, upon review of the OECD's materials, to determine which of the 35 countries they identified would continue to be viewed as a tax haven today. Just can't do it. Moreover, the OECD has also warned since the mid-2000s that the list should only be viewed in its historical context and as an evaluation by the OECD at the point in time in which it was created, which is 1998. The other thing it does, having a blacklist, being glib about it does, is it captures corporations that have legitimate business activity in those foreign jurisdictions. The sponsor of House Bill 721 stated on the record back in 2003 that the bill was not aimed at legitimate foreign business activity. But as the administrator of the division that is responsible for administering this law, I can tell you affirmatively that it does. Now, the other issue that the sponsor indicated is other states do not take this approach. We are we're talking about tax havens, and Montana is on a literal island with this issue. I can tell you also, when attending conferences with other peers and other state agencies, I'm referred to as the blacklist guy. Other states don't take this approach when dealing with how to apportion and deal with multi-state or multinational income. So lastly, before I sit down, the Department of Revenue, I want to be clear about this, does not want to have the discretion to determine what constitutes a tax haven or not. That was actually part of the original bill back in 2003. It was stricken. I can tell you, my staff and I do not believe it's appropriate for us to have that authority in rulemaking. That is a legislative determination that you all should make to the extent you find tax haven lists or no lists important. So rather than painting with a broad brush, my recommendation would be to allow the Department of Revenue to evaluate multinational activity on a case-by-case basis, which we have that authority under 1531.505 already. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Story, Montana Taxpayers Association. We support this bill. We've been working on this issue for many years. For various reasons, the list is still in statute, and we think now's the time and the opportunity to remove it. I think the sponsor and the department have explained adequately how the process works, and it is, again, back to the size of the pie that Montana is going to take a slice of. And some companies, some corporations decide they want to pay on their worldwide activity, and some decide they only want to pay on what's in Water's Edge or inside the United States. And so, you know, those that pay inside the United States, the pie is smaller, but Montana still gets its proper share of the pie. So that's the main issue. In 2017, the federal government revised the corporate income tax at the federal level, and corporations, multinational corporations, make their decisions based on federal taxes and on taxes in other countries they operate in. And in reality, if the United States had the lowest corporate tax rate in the developed world, we would be a tax haven. Money would flow here because we have a stable banking system, we have a stable judicial system, and if we had a stable tax system, corporations would be coming into the United States as opposed to, going where things work better for them. But we think this is a good bill, and we hope that you will move it on forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Good morning, Chair Hertz, members of the committee. My name is Alan Lloyd. That is spelled L-L-O-Y-D. I am the executive director of the Montana Society of CPAs. I'm going to point out today that I am not personally a CPA. And so the first time Water's Edge crossed my table, I said, explain Water's Edge to me in terms that I can understand. And one of my members was kind enough to explain that Water's Edge election allows a corporation to spend more in tax to avoid higher compliance cost. So instead of having their accounting firm go through the process of apportioning, taking this pizza and slicing it in very peculiar ways, they can simply make an election, pay a higher rate, and move on down the road. We feel that repealing this list of countries is removing some outdated language. It makes this part of the code more clear and easier to understand. And for those reasons, we support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Mr. Chairman, Charles Robison, that's R-O-B-I-S-O-N, here on behalf of the Montana Chamber of Commerce. Tax haven legislation is a policy that appeared to make sense when adopted. However, the test of time has shown that this list is not effective in practice. It has the effect of capturing conscientious companies that do business in the Bahamas, for example. So the Department of Revenue also has tools to address companies that are misrepresenting the apportionment of income. And for those reasons, we urge you to pass this and put Montana in line with the rest of the country. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alan Olson, representing the Montana Petroleum Association. And for all the reasons previously stated, we support this as well.
Next proponent. Seeing we have no proponents on Zoom either, we'll go to opponents. Opponents in the room.
Good morning, Chair Hertz, members of the committee. Rose Bender, B-E-N-D-E-R, representing Montana Budget and Policy Center. We rise in opposition to Senate Bill 246. Decades ago, states put in place the Water's Edge election to allow multinational corporations to calculate taxable income using only their U.S.-based income. This election allows multinational corporations a competitive edge over Montana-based small businesses by allowing them to not include their worldwide income in their apportionment factor when calculating their corporate income tax. This is a tax break that Montana Main Street businesses cannot access. Since the Water's Edge election was put in place, shifting profits overseas has grown dramatically, and the use of Montana's Water's Edge election is evidence of that. In 2020, out of the about 20,000 corporations that filed taxes in Montana, 687 benefited from the Water's Edge giveaway. The number of corporations filing Water's Edge has more than tripled since 2009, when 221 corporations claimed the Water's Edge election. In fact, U.S. corporations are expected to continue avoiding taxes on nearly $300 billion annually overseas post-2017 federal tax reform. This figure has increased precipitously in the last few years, from $77 billion in 2012 to $300 billion today. Requiring a corporation to include their income from known tax haven countries when calculating corporate income tax helps to discourage corporations from hiding income overseas. The Multi-State Tax Commission has model statutes for combined reporting that include a corporation's income in a tax haven in their apportionment. I have the model combined reporting statute to pass out with permission, and the tax haven criteria can be found on page 2, section 1, part 1.
Please.
Adopting similar criteria would assuage any concern with the outdated nature of Montana's current tax haven list. Of the 12 states and the District of Columbia that allow corporations to file Water's Edge. Five include tax haven criteria like that recommended by the Multi-State Tax Commission, and one, Colorado, adopted a list of tax haven countries in 2021, like Montana's. Requiring tax haven income to be included in the apportionment of corporate income tax is well within the norms of state tax policy. In closing, Senate Bill 246 increases the uneven playing field between our Main Street businesses and multinational corporations. We ask that you not make competing as a small business in Montana even more difficult than it already is. Please vote no on Senate Bill 246 and give our local businesses a better chance at staying open. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further opponents? I'm seeing no opponents on Zoom either. Informational witnesses.
Chair Hertz, members of the committee, Finn McMichael, MCM, ICH, AEL, an economist with the Department of Revenue, and available for questions on the fiscal note if you have any.
Thank you. Any further informational witnesses in the room? Seeing none online, questions from the committee? Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple, but I'll ask one and then wait my turn. I am curious. So we have a fiscal note, Mr. Chair. Let me ask Mr. Bell, please.
Okay. Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunwell.
Chair Hertz, Mr. Bell, thank you for being here. So the fiscal note shows a million dollar hit to the general fund, which we have now. I mean, we've got a revenue balance. We have to weigh what we spend our money on. So my question is, since we're seeing a negative balance, how does this not reflect that some multinational corporations are avoiding paying taxes? I know you said it's better to take it on a case-by-case basis, but when you say that, it says to me, I know I've worked with your staff, and I know how overworked you are, and I don't see in the fiscal note that you need any more FTE to do that. So I don't see how all this aligns. If you could address the avoiding taxation question, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunwell, trying to discern or better understand the avoiding of taxes question that you have here. Are you asking, is the negative revenue implications to the general fund evidence that taxpayers that are sucked into the Water's Edge or the tax haven list now, by virtue of that, avoiding paying taxes, am I getting to the heart of what you're asking me?
Yes, as reflected in the fiscal note, and as may not be reflected in the fiscal note because of your staffing, and even though your staff are very hardworking, I know I've worked with them, in that frame, how can we not be allowing multinational corporations to have more of an incentive to, go to the lower taxing countries rather than paying the taxes in Montana, even though most of the work might be done here in Montana?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunwell, first appreciate your recognition of the hard work that my staff performs. I appreciate that. I know that they do as well. I think you raise a couple of interesting points. The first off that I would say just on a broad basis is that the issue that I think the department and the sponsor and others have with the list is that it assumes that all business activity occurring in those listed countries is done just to avoid the payment of taxes. And from my perspective as the administrator and formerly an attorney for the department, I've seen evidence that that's just not the case, that companies have legitimate business activity in some of the listed countries. They do so not for tax avoidance purposes, but because that's just where that business happens to be. And from an equity perspective, if you had, I don't have the list in front of me, but let's just say we have England and Ireland, and we have a production facility in each of those countries, same exact facility, same exact number of employees, same exact activity in Montana. From an equity perspective, the folks that made the Water's Edge election that had just England activity could exclude that income because it's legitimate business activity. If it's the same company had activity in Ireland, if that's a tax haven country, I'm assuming that it, I'm just saying it. If I'm offending Irish people, I apologize.
You love you.
They're soaked into paying more, not because they're avoiding taxes, just by virtue of where that production facility was. And so I think that's the one thing that Representative Erickson back in 2003 said on the record was he was not targeting that type of legitimate activity. I think that a broader point, another point I would offer is it assumes that that's the only countries where those tax avoidance is occurring. And I think that that's part of the problem with the list is it has not been updated since 1998 or 2000. The OECD, the organization that promulgated the list, has said the original list of countries, none of them are uncooperative tax havens anymore. They have transparent practices. They have their preference, their rates are in line with where they should be. And so I think if to the extent that the legislature were to say a tax haven list is good in theory, I guess that's fine, but then it requires a reevaluation of what it means to be a tax haven to begin with, and then where is that occurring within the broader spectrum of all the other countries that are out there. But I do think that from a policy perspective, yet we do have resource issues in terms of the FTE that we have and folks that are already working hard. From my perspective, it's important to the folks that companies pay their fair share and they get it right, which it is, if we see on audit that a company is engaging in income shifting practices, we should make adjustments to that, regardless of where that income tax shifting practices is occurring. And I think we can accomplish that with the staff that we have now. If I didn't think we could, it would be reflected in the fiscal note. Hopefully, Senator, I answered your question, at least a little bit.
Thank you. That was a very good answer. Thank you, Mr. Bell. Can I have a follow-up, please?
Hold on one second. And Mr. Bell, while you're on this topic, too, so I just want to clarify. So a company that makes a Water's Edge election, you just accept that. But one a company who does not, and they're using the apportionment factor, you still have the ability to look at where their income is coming from. So you could go to offshore places, and if you suspected that they were diverting income, you could still look at those, correct?
Mr. Chair, absolutely right. And I think the other point, I know it's maybe a little afield of your question, is that it assumes that the companies are bringing in income. A lot of times what happens with foreign entities is that they have foreign losses that they bring into the country. And Water's Edge elections are prospective in nature. They have to guess what they think is going to happen. So a lot of times what you see is them making the wrong bet, and they aren't allowed to retroactively go back and change that. But to your point, Senator, or Mr. Chair, yes, if they don't make a Water's Edge election, we look at the whole, back to the pizza, the whole pizza, and we can, again, target income shifting within that realm.
Continue, Senator.
Thank you, Chair Hertz. A question for Ms. Bender, please.
Chair Hertz, Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Chair Hertz, Ms. Bender. I don't know if you were listening completely to Mr. Bell's. How realistic is this that they will take this on a case-by-case basis and make sure that multinational corporations are not avoiding taxes, paying their fair share in Montana?
Chair Hertz, Senator Dunwell, I would say that the inner workings of the department, Mr. Bell obviously has a better understanding of than I, but adopting criteria that gives the department authority to know what a tax haven is, like that proposed by the Multi-State Tax Commission, is a way to ensure that they are able to require corporations to include that tax haven income in their apportionment and not allow multinational corporations to have as large of a competitive advantage when it comes to taxation that they already do with the Water's Edge election as compared to Montana's Main Street businesses.
Okay, follow up, please.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Hertz. Ms. Bender, I hope you don't mind, but can you rewind the tape to the time when you worked at the Department of Revenue and saw how our corp tax worked and how many of our corp tax employees had to go chasing, had to travel out of state, had to go chasing after these corporations, and sometimes we got resolution and sometimes we didn't?
Chair Hurt, Senator Dunwell, I will just say, I think it would help the department to have tax haven criteria in Montana code annotated, and this bill removes it, and that is not good for requiring multinational corporations to pay their fair share.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator O'Brien.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. McMichael, please. And
Mr. Chair, Senator O'Brien.
Thank you, and you're welcome to redirect. This is a good discussion, and it's a fascinating topic, I think. Is to your knowledge, I'm just, so when I think of tax havens, I often think of the Bahamas and a storefront with, you know, with nothing happening there except for taxes coming in and out. And Mr. Bell certainly clarified that that's not the case, at least not always the case. I'm wondering if, to your knowledge, are there states that do dig deeper? I know it sounds like an accountant's nightmare, but dig deeper to look at apportionment and evidence of, let's say, what sales are or what manufacturing, quantifying manufacturing, kind of that apportionment concept overseas or beyond the water's edge, so that there is clear evidence of business being done in Ireland or in the Bahamas or wherever it might be.
Mr. Chair, Senator O'Brien, I'm not aware of that type of information, or I haven't found it. I'm not sure if.
Can I redirect it?
I don't.
Please.
I'm not sure that.
I'm not sure there's any other Irishman in the room, but go ahead.
Seen anyone who wants that redirected to them either.
Mr. Bell, do you want to take
Bell.
A shot at it?
Bell, right. Yeah.
Chair, Madam Vice Chair. Same answer. I'm not aware of any other state that really is, or a group of states for that matter, that have really sat down and taken a hard look at what does it really mean to be a tax haven or tax, you know, income shifting or tax avoidance techniques. I know that at some point in the recent past, the Multi-State Tax Commission has sort of a transfer pricing analysis, and that's part of the statute that I referenced a little earlier, where there's, again, I don't want to be glib, but that's me. And games going on with respect to what companies do back and forth. I don't know the status of what's going on with that. It's been several years. I can certainly check and see if there's any update about progress that they have made. But I'm not aware through MTC or COST or federal or FTA, for that matter, of any real deep dive to help states analyze what's going on beyond the water's edge, unfortunately.
Thank you. Nothing further, Mr. Chair.
Committee, I'll just make clear that Ireland is not on the tax haven list. Any further questions from the committee? I have a question for Ms. Bender.
Chairman Hertz.
So, Ms. Bender, in your comments, you talked about billions and billions of dollars being shifted to tax havens. According to the fiscal note, it looks like the $1.3 million in loss in revenue may be attributable to 80 corporations in Montana. If that's the case, it's like $16,000 per corporation. I mean, are you questioning the department's ability to continue to do and go after multinational corporations and find some of these tax havens?
Chairman Hertz, my comment on the $300 billion is a national number. Montana is a small state. There are a lot of multinational corporations who do not file in Montana. The department's ability to require corporations to file their tax haven income is based on an outdated list at this point. So that list needs to be updated, or this criteria needs to be adopted, and that number may change.
Spender, do you have any estimate of these 80 corporations that may be shifting income overseas to tax havens in Montana?
Chairman Hertz, what I know is that the number of corporations filing water's edge in Montana has increased precipitously since this legislation was adopted. That shows that there are more corporations determining that they have a better tax liability if they are allowed to not pay tax on their international income. That shows evidence of international profit shifting. Kimberly Clausing, who is an expert in this field, has done many studies of this and shows continuing growth in profit shifting overseas. That is something that our Main Street businesses cannot do. They are competing against corporations who are able to get this tax benefit where they cannot access. That is unfair.
Ms. Bender, though, they're the water's edge election, too. I mean, they're paying a higher tax rate to get that benefit. And we heard testimony from the CPAs that a lot of companies do this just to the complexity and savings that they would have, because they got to allocate staff on how to allocate all that, too. So don't you see some of that happening also, that this just isn't about trying to avoid taxes?
I see an increase in multinational corporations choosing to file an election that requires them to pay a higher tax rate so they can avoid taxes overseas. That is what I see.
Thank you. Senator Tribus.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question for Mr. Bell, I believe.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tribus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bell, one question that comes to mind is, do you ever cooperate with the IRS, or do they ever notify you of, say, some of their enforcement compliance or enforcement efforts of compliance, say, of, you know, proper apportionment, especially when a tax haven may be used for avoidance? Do you guys cooperate much?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tribus, we do have MOUs with the IRS, and we have a cooperative relationship to the extent that you can have a cooperative relationship with the IRS, I suppose. But the IRS really is not worried about apportionment. It's a really state-specific issue because they have the jurisdiction and the authority to grab income everywhere. So it really, the MOUs and the agreements that we have with them really relate more to individual income tax and partnerships.
Senator Tribus.
One more follow-up, Mr. Chair and Mr. Bell. So I guess if I know they've had some efforts, the IRS has had some efforts to go after some I don't know, it's probably ongoing, but I think there was an increased enforcement efforts in the last, I don't know, say 5 years or more. When that happens, maybe without even cooperation, does that clue the department in here to say, hey, that company that's featured by the IRS may be something that we want to check into as a state as well?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tribus, sure. And I think that through those efforts, to the extent that the IRS adjusts, makes determinations that there was income shifting going on at the federal level that affected their federal taxable income, that would be reflected on their Montana return. So the federal government, and to the extent that they've made those adjustments, would be reflected in what happens here.
Thank you.
And Mr. Bell, you still collect information on your corporate SEEK returns that basically requires the taxpayer to disclose if they have had an audit in so many the last few years from the IRS?
Mr. Chair, I believe that's the case, yes.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no further questions from the committee, Senator Zolnikoff, thank you for educating us on Water's Edge and tax havens. Would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I guess the main point is that what we have in law today is very outdated. Now, you could have different philosophies on what you do with it, but I definitely will defer to the Department of Revenue on this and their expertise on it. So I remember in 15 or 17, I think it was the representative from, I think it may have been Luxembourg, came in and was like, why are we like on your list? We aren't even this anymore. And we aren't that, we never were, we were on this, we took care of it. And they're like, can you remove us? And there was no movement or adjustment. So if anything, if nothing else, it's an embarrassment that we have this list in our laws that is so antiquated that it doesn't even make sense, yet it's still our laws. So I am going to defer to the department on this one. I trust their judgment, and I believe we should make this change. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on Senate Bill 246. Now we'll open up the hearing on Senate Bill 258.
Good morning again, Chair Hertz, members of the Tax Committee. I'm your fellow Tax Committee member, Mary Ann Dunwell, Senator from Senate District 42, Helena, East Helena, right where you're sitting. Today, I bring you Senate Bill 258, a tax credit for Social Security income that Montanans pay. We just heard a bill to advantage, I believe, in my opinion, multinational corporations. This is the bill to advantage folks who have worked hard all their lives to build Montana communities, and now I believe they deserve a break. Montana is one of 12 states that still taxes Social Security income. So that means 38 do not. They've seen the light. And I'm going to ask you to let's follow that light. So our state is home to 190,000 retirees who receive Social Security income and pay taxes on that. There are actually 250,000 Montanans who receive some form of Social Security, like SSDI, SSI, and pay taxes on that. So with SB 258 and this tax credit, most Montanans would end up not paying Social Security tax. It would be a wash. So why do this, a tax credit, rather than just a bill to eliminate Social Security tax? Well, I've listened to my colleagues, to you, that this revenue balance we're experiencing between $2.5 and $3 billion, we'll get a better idea next week when the status sheet and all the fiscal information comes out, but this allows us to review the tax credit every few years to see if we still have the revenues to accommodate this tax credit. So it joins the list of Montana tax credits. So let me walk through the bill. The first page is basically the what this is. So folks who receive Social Security income can receive the lesser of $1,200. So $1,200 as a tax refund, or 100% of taxes imposed on Social Security benefits, whichever is the least. And then it's income based, it's scaled on income. So we glide down. So the more income a person who receives Social Security income, the more they have in their adjusted gross income, they pay $25 less. Their credit is reduced $25 for each $1,000 of federal adjusted gross income. And that's outlined in page 1, line 19 through 23. So, for example, at $65,000 for every married individual who files a joint return, and for every surviving spouse. So any income above that is reduced $25 for every $1,000, and then $55,000 for every head of household, and $45,000 for every person other than a surviving spouse or head of household, so single filer. Then on the bill, page 2, as I mentioned, this credit would be included in the list of Montana tax credits to be reviewed periodically for its effectiveness and whether we can still afford it. That's basically it. I don't know about you, but as I've been out knocking doors since 2013 for my various legislative campaigns, I have heard time and again, why does Montana still tax my Social Security income? That's not fair. We've already paid tax on it, and now we're having to pay again. It's just not fair. And I agreed with them, and we never had the money. We've had bills before to remove the tax on Social Security, and always reluctantly had to vote no because we didn't have the money, especially in 2017. Now we have the money to do this for Montanans who have worked hard all of their lives and deserve a break. It especially helps the folks who rely totally on Social Security income. And as you know from knocking doors out there, there are lots of folks out there that fit that category. So with that, I ask for due pass and we'll leave it to the proponents and opponents. Thank you.
Thank you. Proponents on Senate Bill 258.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dallas Reese, R-E-E-S-E. I'm a 73-year-old native son. I was raised on the High Line after moving to Helen in 1990. I've since retired, and I stand in support of Senate Bill 258. The approach, because I was raised on a High Line, I spent a lot of time in the small towns and communities all over eastern Montana doing one thing and another. And so I've taken kind of a small town eastern Montana approach to my view of this bill. And while a quarter million Montanans have the benefit of this credit, I think the amount of the credit will be much more substantial in small town Montana than it is in our larger cities. Yes, the majority of the people that get the credit will live in our larger cities, but I do think the benefit is going to be more noticeable in our small communities. Our small communities, we don't really have a lot of economic data that says whether extra money in people's pockets is going to boost the economy of those small communities. But I think that knowing the mindset of people that live in those small communities, I can see where this bill is going to have more of an aesthetic or esoteric or spiritual community spirit type of impact versus an actual economic impact. And I'd like to give you an example. I grew up in Havre. One of the neighboring counties is Liberty County. The Census Bureau says that there are 2,000 individuals living in Liberty County. Of those 2,000 individuals that live there, one in six receive are over the age of 65 and receive retirement income from the Social Security system. 300 people, small county. Not a big dollar impact for any of them individually, but what they're going to do in that community with that little bit of extra money in their pocket is where those impacts are going to be felt. They're going to buy that extra bag of cookies at the bake sale. They're going to buy an extra bingo card on Sunday night at the church. They're going to have that friendly quibble about who's paying for lunch today. So those are the types of impacts that I think are going to be most noticeable from this bill. Those same things will happen in the large communities, but they won't be as noticeable as they are in the small towns of Montana. Only a few people are going to be able to get those benefits in those small communities, but I think that impact is outsized as compared to the dollar amounts of the benefit that they will receive. The second reason that I like this bill is more from a tax policy standpoint. As Senator Dunwell pointed out, this bill has a relatively small impact on the state general fund. And actually, I think that's a sustainable impact even in normal budget times. Around $16 million that the state would lose in general fund revenue associated with this bill. And I do think that's sustainable in the state budget going forward. Plus, the policy of having it under review on occasion is a good policy. That's a good way to approach tax cuts or tax benefits, is to take it under review every so often. Part of that review should include accurate data. By keeping this credit in place, in years to come, we're going to have accurate data on the people that receive this tax credit, And when we do our analysis on whether a full-blown repeal of taxes on Social Security is a beneficial idea, we're going to have really good information to base that decision on. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for Senate Bill 258, I would urge do pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good morning, committee. Mr. Chairman, my name is Margaret MacDonald, spelled capital M-A-C, capital D-O-N-A-L-D. I'm here today on behalf of Big Sky 55 Plus, which is an organization made up of Montanans older, 55 and older, and we work together to make this state a better place for Montanans of all ages and to support the dignity and well-being of all Montanans. I have to note how impressed I am with the work that you all do here in this committee and in tax. Having spent 12 years in the legislature and barely darkened the door of the tax committee, it's impressive the complexity and the importance of these bills that you see every day and how they impact people. So I thank you for sure. Senate Bill 258 is the kind of bill that any of us who have ever walked the block and knocked the doors can appreciate. I have seen the thousands of Montanans who will benefit from this bill if it is adopted. I have seen their modest, well-cared-for homes and yards. I have seen their pride and their community spirit. Senate Bill 258 brings sustained benefits to older Montanans. It is sustainable because it is targeted to those to where it does the most good. It is impactful because the households who get this credit pretty much are living not exactly hand to mouth, but they're spending pretty much everything that comes in on what they need to keep a roof over their head and to survive with a little bit of dignity. These credits will go straight out the door to the pharmacist, to the hardware store, to the grocery store, the dentist and the eye doctor, and if we're lucky, maybe a movie and a game or a pizza or a dinner out on a Friday night. It's sustainable because it is modest fiscal impact, particularly in light of the bills that have, some of the bills that have crossed this this session already. Senate Bill 258 is affordable moving forward. It is meaningful and it goes to households that really do need this. We sure hope you will give this a yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents in the room? We have a couple online. Chrissy, are the proponents on Zoom?
Mr. Chair, no, they are not. So we do not have any proponents online.
All right. We will then move to opponents in the room.
Good morning again, Chair Hertz, members of the committee. Again, my name is Alan Lloyd. That's spelled L-L-O-Y-D. I'm executive director of the Montana Society of CPAs, and we oppose Senate Bill 258. The society understands the desire to help those receiving Social Security, but as you have heard me say before, we do not feel tax credits are an appropriate method to do these things. During the 2021 session, Senator Hertz passed Senate Bill 399, which removed the majority of Montana's income tax credits. That simplification is set to be effective January 1st of 2024. Adding credits back into the code just starts the ball rolling again to take us back to an overly complicated tax system. We oppose this bill and any bill that would add credits back to the tax code. Today, I'd like to talk about kind of two impacts of complexity. The first is, as we add more rules and special treatments for specific groups, it lengthens the code. It makes the forms and the documents that folks receive just longer and more cumbersome. Many taxpayers will see that longer form and go, I don't know how to do this. And they'll run out to their door and try and find a paid tax preparer to help them with that. We feel that if we keep the code simple and have a low rate that's applied to a broad definition of income, that will allow us to have a simple code that more people will feel comfortable navigating on their own without the help of a paid tax preparer. Second, each of these credits requires that software providers write code to do the math for each one of these situations. The Department of Revenue then works with those companies to make sure that they got it right and that any tax returns that they're going to submit are correct. This process is done every year, works quite well. The issue that we see is that since Montana doesn't have a massive number of taxpayers, our friends at these software companies don't exactly put us at the top of the list. And so as we add complication to our tax system, it just delays those groups from getting their work done and getting the returns available for folks that do prepare tax returns to submit them. You may think that just this one credit isn't going to create an overly complicated system, and I would agree, but I assure you every other credit that comes before you will make the same argument, and soon enough we'll end up again with a very complicated tax system. So for those reasons, we ask that you keep the tax code simple, vote against this bill. Thank you for your time. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any other opponents in the room? Seeing none, we have no opponents online either. Informational witnesses.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brian Olson, O-L-S-E-N is the last name. I'm with the Business and Income Tax Division. I'm available for any questions on the bill. Also here with me is Aaron McNay, an economist with Tax Policy and Research, and he'll be available for any questions on the fiscal note.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator McClafferty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dallas Reese, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator McClafferty.
Thank you, Mr. Reese. I'm just curious, and you might have said this, and I missed it kind of looking at the fiscal note, but do you prepare taxes? Do you file taxes?
Mr. Chair, Senator McClafferty, no, I don't.
Okay. Do you file your own?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, I do.
Do you think that this would make it any harder to file taxes if there was a credit like this on your tax return?
Mr. Chair, Senator McClafferty, actually, because of the changes that were implemented last session, Senate Bill 399, I believe, Montana income taxes are actually going to, in my mind, are going to become easier to file because the income associated is basically federal adjusted gross income and the taxable Social Security income from our federal return. So those numbers are just transferred to the state tax form. This credit, there are a couple of ways that it could be applied and determined, and all of them are fairly simple because it is a credit just on the Social Security portion of a person's income. It's really a matter of trying to come up with a multiplication factor. Maybe it's the tax rate, maybe it's some other thing to determine the amount of the credit. So I do think that application of this credit is fairly simple. The other thing is that because it is under review on a regular basis, if there comes a point where we find that it's not being used extensively or the impacts are different than we anticipated, it would be easy enough to make some changes. Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your answer.
Senator Temple.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lloyd,
Chair Hertz, Senator Temple.
We have a credit. What would be the difference between this credit, the way it works, and if it was just exempted?
By and large, the impacts for complexity would remain very similar. Exclusions also have to be, the math has to be done, the instructions have to be written so that you read through and you go, okay, I subtract this out. Whether you subtract it out up there or you get a credit later in the return, has minimal impact on the complexity. I think the other point that I was making there is that, each one of these, today we've got a generous balance in our accounts. As we move forward and look at that, as the state may need more money, when you take these things out, you're inevitably going to have to raise the rate that we all pay to make up the difference. And so I think each one of these, it's not one of these that's going to kill us. It's the fact that we're using credits again to solve these issues And we just feel that it's more advantageous to, you know, allow the effects of Senate Bill 399 to really take hold, and then for us to, you know, protect that work that's been done so that we can, you know, see the impact of a more simple tax system.
Thank you. One more question. Yes. To another, Mr. Olson. Mr. Olson, what would be the difference with a fiscal note credit versus a total exemption?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Temple, if I can refer that to Mr. McNay, I'm not sure if he'll have a specific answer for you, but he's better suited for that.
Mr. McNay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You heard the question?
Chairman, Senator, yes, I did. I do have a clarifying question. Are you referring to a complete exemption of Social Security income, or are you just referring to exempting a portion of Social Security income?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the 65-plus, whatever this bill was referring to, retired Social Security.
Chairman, Senator, right now, if we look on our 2021 returns, there's about $1.5 billion in total Social Security income reported. If we exempt all of that from taxation, then the impact of that is about $100 million. If we were to set up a exemption that only exempts a portion of Social Security income like this tax credit does, it only exempts Social Security income for people within a particular income range, depending on how it's all estimated, the impact would probably be similar, but it probably wouldn't be exactly the same, because exactly how you determine the credit versus how people take the, you know, an income exemption probably wouldn't work out exactly the same. You would have to kind of go through and figure out various income thresholds. So I can't give you an exact answer, but depending how you set it up, probably be somewhere around the same amount.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Senator Treves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the sponsor.
Chair Hertz, Senator Treves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, on the fiscal note, on the technical note, on page 3, well, there's 3 technical notes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Mr. Chair. Senator Treves, thank you. I was going to put that in my clothes, now's as good a time as any.
Great.
So I wanted to make sure, once I saw this fiscal note, I wanted to make sure all my T's were crossed and I's were dotted, and we addressed the concerns of the department that I'm assuming did this fiscal note. So we are clarifying absolutely that the credit is non-refundable. That's number one. We, as we were drafting this bill, thought it was implied, but just to make sure, we're clarifying that with a simple amendment. And then the married taxpayers filing jointly, each taxpayer, each person in the couple, got it. I'm sorry, I'm under the weather today and barely getting stuff out. Each member...
Each taxpayer.
Each taxpayer. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. Each taxpayer, you get a credit for that. Tax credit.
And they both would get a credit. Yes.
You too, Senator Treves. So yes, each member can, each taxpayer can claim the credit, because each person, if they get Social Security income, they paid into it when they worked through their lives. So we have that. And then, so that's number 3 in the technical note. The number 2, I think that was answered in the hearing, that this really... will be simple to administer, and just the taxpayer can claim it just like any other credit they claim. Just like we have an earned income tax credit for working Montanans still working and paying into Social Security, this kind of works like that. This is a credit for folks who have worked all their lives and now just kind of want to have the freedom to have that friendly quibble over who's going to pick up the tab at Joe's Diner on Main Street.
Thank you.
Follow up?
And yes, Mr. Chair, I guess on number three, does the fiscal note assume that it's a single credit or a multiple credit for couples?
May I redirect that to Mr. Reese, who, by the way, is very humble. He's a brilliant tax mind. He worked at the department for many years. And may I redirect that to Mr. Reese, please? Thank you.
You would.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trevis, I had kind of hung my head shaking it here just a few minutes ago. I believe that in the fiscal note, the credit for married filing jointly has been assumed that both of the parties get the credit for that. And I was looking through the body of the fiscal note to try to make sure of that. I hadn't found it quite.
Number five on page two.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Department assumed each individual gets up to $1,200.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Senator?
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yep.
Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, I do have a question prior to Mr. Olson. Mr. Olson, it looks like on your guys' assumptions on determining how much taxes are related to Social Security, it looks like you're just using a simple allocation. If you got 30,000 of Social Security and 60,000 of taxable income, you got a ratio there, and you multiply that times the total tax due to get it apportioned to the Social Security. Is that kind of what you're doing?
Mr. Chairman, yes. That's I believe that's the assumptions used in the fiscal note, and that's okay. How right. We feel is best to proceed.
And then one other request that I would have, and maybe Mr. McNay can get it for us, is can you provide us with a chart as to who this credit impacts is on the 10 decile group? So,
Mr. General, right?
Yes. All right. Seeing no further questions from the committee, Senator Dunnell, you'd like to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for a good hearing, good questions, and good discussion. I really enjoy this committee. I think we all put our heads together and work well together. So I asked for a due pass on Senate Bill 258. You know, it helps. Folks have worked hard all their lives and frankly did pay tax on the Social Security income at the time. And, you know, they can now enjoy that extra cup of coffee at Joe's Diner. And so it not only helps them enjoy Montana's quality of life and gives them the freedom to do that, it helps the communities. It helps businesses that some of this money will be spent on. You know, the local folks, you know, don't spend their money out of country or out of state. They spend it right here and help our small business neighbors. So it's win-win for everyone, and I hope you vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you. That closes the hearing on Senate Bill 258. Members, we're going to take a short recess here. So try to be back here at 10:10, and we'll finish up on my bill, and then we will do some executive action.
Senate taxes come back to order. Let's just give you guys a few seconds to sit down.
I think that's a few seconds.
All right,
Mr.
this
Chair.
Opens up the hearing on Senate Bill 303.
Thank you, Senator Greg Hertz, Senate District 6 out of Polson. Today I bring you a bill increasing penalties for noncompliance on tax withholding and reporting requirements. So what this bill does is the first section deals with W-2 statements, moving the penalty from $5 up to $50 for each failure to file, with a minimum penalty of $1,000 if the employer doesn't furnish the required statements more than 30 days, calendar days after the due date of the filing requirement. And then on the second page, penalty for not filing royalty and tax statements. The royalty statement goes from $50 to $150 and with a minimum penalty of $3,000. So you might ask why we need to do this. Well, quite frankly, I was a little surprised, especially on W-2s. So those of you who are employers, or those of you who are employees, and obviously you get a paycheck every couple of weeks, once a month, you get taxes withheld out of your paycheck, including state income taxes. And employers have to pay that money to the state of Montana. It's based on how much withhold, but it can be as frequently as every couple of pay periods or every pay period or once a month. I think they might have some quarterly and maybe some yearly, but those are just for really small employers. So they're getting these reports at the department. Oh, yeah. Hey, I have 80 employees, and I've been withholding taxes all year, and I've been paying that to you guys, but comes down to the end of the year, and where's your W-2? You didn't file any W-2 for any of these employees. So it's kind of odd to me why these employers aren't even doing it. So that's the reason for the penalty, maybe to get a little bigger hammer and to go after these folks. And then also it's helps the employee too, because quite frankly, the state needs that information in order for you to file a tax return and possibly get a refund on your tax return. So it does slow down the process for the employee who's filing the tax return. So it's fairly simple. The only thing that I've discussed with the department is, and also in here, the department may waive a penalty. If you look on page 1, line 18, if you can demonstrate that there's reasonable cause for failure to file. And the department, I've worked with them in the past on some waiver penalties for me many, many years ago. They're always very willing to waive penalties. Also, I'm going to talk to the department there, maybe with a possible of a one-time abatement on this, too. So your W-2s are required to be filed by January 31st. And if you don't, then typically after that period, they know who you are, you didn't file, they'll send a letter out sometime between the middle of February, late February, to the 1st of March, telling you, hey, look, you need to file this. You basically need to file it 30 days from January 31st, so it's due March 1st. I think maybe a possible amendment might be after you get that letter in your hand, then maybe you have 30 days after you got the letter to file. If you don't file, then the penalty applies. But to me, that would be a one-time only get-out-jail-free card. And then the next time you do it, sorry, we already told you once, you need to pay a little more attention and get your W-2s filed in. So that could be a possibility. But so we'll take a look at that. But with that, we'll sit down. We listen to the proponents and opponents.
Thank you. Are there any proponents?
Good morning again, Mr. Chair. Derek Bell, B-E-L-L. I'm the Division Administrator for the Department of Revenue's Business and Income Tax Division here in support of Senate Bill 303. First things, I'd like to thank Senator Hertz for sponsoring this legislation. This is an important compliance issue that you just heard that we're confronted with on an annual basis, and it's getting worse. Again, wage withholding statements are due to us by January 31st, and the failure for employers to file those things in a timely basis directly impairs their employees' ability to get an income tax refund during the filing season. And I can tell you that when we can't cross-match that information, the W-2 from the employer and the return from the employee, and we're talking thousands of these things, it stops the system for everybody. In 2001, for example, almost 8,000 employers did not meet their filing obligation. And again, when they don't meet their wage withholding statement with us by January 31st, employees cannot receive their refund of Montana state income taxes. Again, that data is necessary for us to validate the taxpayer's income tax return. The current penalty, which is $5 for each failure with a minimum of $50, is just not getting the job done, frankly. As sponsor indicated, Senate Bill 303 increases the penalty to $50 for each failure with a $1,000 minimum. Now, we realize that this is a steep increase to the penalty that's in current law, and we've got a couple mechanisms built into this legislation beyond those, or in addition to what Senator Hertz talked about with respect to a potential amendment. First thing is to avoid penalizing employers who missed the deadline inadvertently. Senate Bill 303 has a 30-day safe harbor. So the penalty only kicks in if the statements are filed more than 30 days after the due date of the return. And like other penalties, Senate Bill 303 explicitly states that the Department of Revenue may waive the penalty if the employer establishes reasonable cause. And lastly, the penalties that are included in Senate Bill 303, while steeper than they are now, are much, much lower than the same types of penalties imposed by the Internal Revenue Service. And there, those penalties can max out into hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we are not proposing that. I think before I sit down for questions, what I'd like to point out, or what I'd like to focus on at the end here, is penalties do a couple different things. You know, they penalize for poor behavior, not complying with the law. But on the other side of the coin, they also incentivize the behavior we want. And so to the extent that we can get employers, and we currently do, and I have employees here that can talk more about this than I can, our object is to get these employers filing timely wage withholding statements with us on an annual basis so that we don't have to penalize them. So to the extent that we can use that 30-day period, the reasonable cause waiver, we will. And our object is, the penalty is a hammer for sure, but compliance is really the objective that we're after here, and we think that this bill will help us in that regard. Appreciate your support. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Morning, Chair Zolnikoff, members of the committee. My name is Alan Lloyd, spelled L-L-O-Y-D, and I am Executive Director of the Montana Society of CPAs. We stand in support of this bill. Much like Senator Hertz, when we initially saw this, we said, well, why on earth are they doing such a thing? And then as we learned about the amount of noncompliance out there, we quickly said, well, this seems like a good idea. And for our members, the water flows down the hill. If the W-2s don't get to the employees don't get the W-2s to us, we can't file the returns. And then, you know, if the employer hasn't submitted it to the state, sometimes the tax software will say, hey, we can't verify this. We're having issues there. And so for those reasons, we support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Opponents? Informational witnesses?
Hello, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Williams, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S. I'm a tax examiner with the withholding unit, and I am here to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Further informational witnesses? Questions from the committee? Senator Tribus?
And a couple, Mr. Chair. I'll start with Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tribus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bell. Does the department accept QuickBooks W-2 files directly? I don't think they do.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tribus, I would like to redirect that question if I could.
Yeah, please do.
Yep. Redirect.
Mr. Chair, committee member, yes, we do.
Okay.
QuickBooks does. They're one of many of our payroll providers that we work with.
See, Mr. Chair. And,
follow up,
Ms. Williams. And is that from all versions of QuickBooks or just the online version or desktop versions?
Chairman, committee member, it does depend on the version that they have. We do have some scenarios where we have to work with the employers, to make sure they have the correct version of QuickBooks, yes.
Follow up.
Thank you. And by correct version, is that which versions typically is that going to be? Do you know?
Chairman, committee member, it We work with also our e-services division because they actually work directly with the payroll providers, and they get us the updated version. I believe this year, I think it's like 10.1 or something like that. I don't know the exact number. But.
Okay. Thank you. And then one follow-up for the sponsor.
Follow-up.
And then I'll...
For the sponsor. New question.
Jump off for a minute. Yep.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tribus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. Was it 2017 that the legislature moved up the deadline to January 31st for these sorts of reports from, I forget what date, like February or March? Oh, looks like Ms. Williams has the answer if you want to re-refer that.
I would like to re-refer that. I'm not sure. And Senator Tribus, could you ask a question, too, about why the penalty on the royalties is so much higher than W-2s?
Question.
Chairman, committee member, yes, originally it was February 28th, and then we moved it up to January 31st to match the IRS.
Okay, thank you. I'll have more, but I'll stop for now. Thanks.
Senator Dunwall?
I'll ask that question, Mr. Chair.
All right.
That the sponsor asked, because, I would like to know. So a question for Ms. Williams, the information witness.
Ms. Williams?
Chairman, Excuse me.
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Williams. Thank you for being here. I know it's a super, super, super busy time for you. So appreciate it. And I appreciate your staff, too. I wanted to say that. So my question is, why the difference between withholding penalties, mineral royalty withholding penalties and earned income penalties?
Chairman, Ms. Dunwell, I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I would have to do some research. It was before I started with the department. So I can... Do you happen? Okay. We can get back to you on that.
Perfect. And I do have a follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Williams. So could you tell me what kind of businesses this affects? S-corps, pass-throughs, C-corps, all the businesses in the business and income tax section that BIT administers?
Yes, Chairman, Ms. Dunwell, yes, it will affect everybody. Anybody who has an employer working, or an employee, excuse me, working in the state of Montana, whether it's a Montana employer or an out-of-state employer, they're all follow under that same requirement to submit that information to us.
Perfect. Thank you.
Welcome.
Further questions? Senator McClafferty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Ms. Williams, please. I'm just curious if these are more small businesses, larger businesses, who's the bad actors on not getting the employees their wage income statements?
Chairman, committee member, honestly, it's a variety. There isn't a specific, it's these group of people that do this. It has been my experience when working with taxpayers, withholding taxpayers, that it's just a wide variety. But I do agree with Mr. Bell in that, in my experience working in the department, the response we get a lot of times is, well, I'll just pay you the $50. It's easier than dealing with getting you my W-2s. And so that's why I think this would be a very good thing for the state, honestly.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, would the sponsor like to close?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the good hearing. And I'm sorry I didn't flush that out, the royalty, why that was bigger. We'll get that to the committee. And I want to make sure as we go through here that we're not impacting we want to educate people too, I believe, that hey, look, you need to do this. I'm not quite sure why some of them aren't doing it. It's usually pretty easy. If you're doing something on computer software, you push the button, load the paper, and print out your W-2s. Hand provided ones are might take a little bit more time to do. I don't think too many people are still doing that. And then I believe the department right now, I had done this multiple years ago. You can log on to your website and file W-2s electronically on there. So if you only have like 3 employees, you can go right onto their website, enter all the employees' information. It's like filling out a W-2, and you just push the button and they got it. So there is a lot of easy ways to get this accomplished, especially for very small employers, and maybe it's a little more educational. But I, like I said, I'll work with the department and others on trying to maybe allow some folks to be able to opt out maybe first time. So we'll have to kind of figure out how if we can get that amendment so it makes sense and it's not too difficult on either party. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would request to do pass. Thank you.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on Senate Bill 303.
All right, committee. I'd like to do executive action on one bill. And that is Senate Bill 253. That was my bill on contractors' gross receipts tax. So if everybody wants to pull that bill out of their folders to refresh your memory. Senator Zolnikoff, would you like to move that bill for me, please?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 253 do pass.
Okay. Members, this bill is a contractor's gross receipts tax that I was moving up the minimum award contract from $5,000 up to $80,000 to match it up to what our minimum bid contracts are, plus to help local governments and taxpayers. So we're not withholding this small contractor's gross receipts tax from some of these very small some contracts. So, and then with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move an amendment. So I'd move an amendment, Senate Bill 253.001.001. It's going around, and that was the amendment that I wanted to give contractors another option in regards to getting their contractor's gross receipts tax, which right now they can get it back on personal property tax, their income taxes, and this allows them also to get it back on 2% of the wages that they're that are paid in Montana during the tax year for the construction project. So any questions or comments on that particular amendment? Senator O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I guess for you, actually maybe for Mr. Coles, any sense of a fiscal impact on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I did not get a fiscal impact on this amendment. Actually, Senator Hertz may know I don't have that.
Senator O'Brien, haven't got it yet, trying to request the department. So typically, if you think about this, I don't know if the department can get there or not. So, you know, this credit, you can get your tax back. You have to offset it against some other taxes. So it kind of depends on how many stranded contractors are out there that they just can't get their contractor's gross receipts tax because either they're not paying any income tax, which typically can happen with some contractors because they're buying a lot of equipment. They get a lot of depreciation. They don't have much net income. Or, you know, they may not be paying a lot of personal property tax either due to some of the exclusions we're giving them right now. So, but I will not move this. We can get the amendment on it, and then we can request a new fiscal note as we move forward. So, but Mr. Coles, don't we have to put the amendment on the bill first? Yeah. So, I would like to put the amendment on the bill, and then we can put it back in the folder and then wait for a fiscal note to get to us.
Mr. Chair, I'm still not clear, I'm sorry, on the amendment. I wonder, Mr. Coles, could you just explain simply what it does?
Chair, would you like to explain it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunwell, so, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the amendment right now. As the software works now, if you look at page 2, basically that entire section was inserted. So it's from page 3 to page 21 of page 2. It's putting in a section there. What this is saying is that you can get a rebate of your contractor's gross receipts tax that you pay in of 2% of wages in Montana during the tax year. So it's basically, there's a lot of other things that you can get rebates on as well with the contractor's gross receipts tax and apply it towards taxes. This is allowing you to apply it towards that as well. It's, as you may remember, it's one of those taxes that's paid and then you get the refund back when you apply for it. So it's allowing you to use it for the wages as well. And that's where all the new language comes in, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, good. Thank you.
To Mr. Coles, too, could you kind of, you and I talked about this previously, about getting an updated fiscal note. What's the easiest way? Do we want to put this on and then put it back in the folder? Do we want to put it on and pass it and then hold it from the floor until we get a fiscal note, or what's our options here?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, so the budget office will do a limited amount of these with the chair's request and then the president. What you can do is, you, if you want to see the fiscal note on this, you can pass the amendment and then just basically put the bill back in the file without moving the entire bill forward, and we can get a fiscal note on it from that point. I don't think they'll do it a lot, but they'll do it here and there. So that would be one way to do it. If you do the whole bill, then you might have them wondering where the committee report is. So usually we just kind of put it back in the file after you put the amendment on, Mr. Chairman.
Now, Mr. Coles, they need a special request if we pass the bill, and then at that point in time, don't they have to generate a new fiscal note without?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes. If you pass the bill and it goes to the committee of the whole, then you order a new fiscal note, and they would definitely put it on, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dunwell.
Mr. Chair, how about something you suggested to me on one of my bills waiting for a fiscal note? Just go talk to our fiscal division, like Sam, and they can write a couple sentences for you on the fiscal impact without, while you're waiting All for right. the complete fiscal note.
All right, so committee, is how many people are really concerned about the fiscal impact here?
I am.
All right. All right. Let's put this back in the folder. I'll get a hold of the department. It's usually, I've been easier working with the department than the, and just say, hey, look, could you kind of give me a potential fiscal impact on this? So, all right. So I'll withdraw my motion on the amendment, moving the amendment, and
I will. Mr. Chairman, I withdraw my motion on moving the bill.
Okay. I'll work on that committee, and then so let's. Let's see what we got going forward here. Most of our bills are revenue bills, so they don't have transmittal until April 3rd. So I'm going to maybe try not to push too many of those out to the floor, mainly because we're going to have a lot of general bills hitting the floor here and getting kind of jammed up out there. So I think it would help just to hold these back. So really, we haven't got much. We got some of all the things we haven't done executive action on. Some of my bills that are general bills, we'll be looking at taking some executive action on those next week. Those other ones are revenue. I did get on the military retirement bill. I had a potential amendment on there, and it looks like it cuts that fiscal note from about $8 million down to $4 million. So we can look at that one. And Senator Dunwell, where are you at on your income tax credit for landlords? I saw the revised fiscal note of about $250 million a year, I think it was.
Oh, Mr. Chair, what we're doing is we're clarifying some more things in the bill, and which brings it down. I talked to Sam down in fiscal, brings it down, he said, to about $50 million a year.
Okay, all right. Well, we got plenty of time in that bill, too. It's a revenue bill.
So Mr. Chair, do I need to request a new fiscal note? I have the info from Sam, but will it automatically get a new fiscal note, or?
Senator Dunwell, no, it won't. But why don't you share with me what you got from Sam? Just shoot me an email,
okay?
And then I'll take a look at it, and then I might be able to spur the department to give us an estimate, but I assume what Sam did estimated wise, he probably worked with the department anyway, Department of Revenue. So I'll just have to flesh that out a little bit with Sam, but if you could forward that to me, I'll see if I can help you.
Okay.
Get
Thank
that
you.
Moving along.
And Mr. Chair, can I ask a question of Jarrett? So, Jarrett, Mr. Coulson, I'm trying to remember, do we do anything more with the bill after talking with Sam? I think we removed a chunk of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunwell, so what your amendment does is it does definitely make it to where there's a limit. There was an actual limit put on it, like the $1,200 limit, I believe, was the figure that you came up with Sam. So no matter how many rentals that you had, the maximum amount of the credit that you would get was limited to the specific dollar amount. So
monthly.
Monthly, right. Yes.
Still monthly, yeah. Okay. Thank you. Committee.
All right, and then so there's only, looks like Senator Morgio has a bill that just popped up. Still waiting for a fiscal note on that. Is that, I would assume that's a revenue bill?
No, that's not.
Senate Bill 362?
No.
Okay, so we may have to move. Once we get a fiscal note, I'll try to see where that's rolling, so we'll probably want to hear that next week. Talking to Mr. Coles, there's not a lot of general bills coming our way. I need to talk to a leadership, and it sounds like the floor may be getting jammed up next week. So, like I said, I don't want to lay out some more revenue bills on top of our general bill transmittal, you know, unless we need to. So, so I'm not sure. I'll kind of look and see if that fiscal note pops up on 362. We may meet Tuesday, and then if. Once I kind of look and see if we're going to do any executive action, too, I'll give you a heads up a day or two before on that. So, but with that, I don't know if the committee got any other things they want to talk about or bring up. All right. So with that, Monday, we're not meeting Monday. No, we're not meeting Monday. And we're not meeting any time yet. So it will be determined. So I'll make sure you have some information that I'll probably look at the weekend and see what things are popping up and work with Lauren and Jared on if we're going to meet on Tuesday. So
maybe we could take on a few fish and game bills, help them out.
Yeah, judiciary.
Yeah. No, we don't want to do that.
No.
So.
Yeah.
How about judiciary? They're plugged up.
Yeah. All right, that members.
They love their stuff.
Meeting's adjourned.